Alright, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is episode 4. And let me scare you about the books we all got scared of as kids. My name is Corey, and this is my podcast. We're going to talk about books that we all got scared of as kids. Not the movies, not the campfire stories, not even the nightmares. I'm talking about the books that lived in our backpacks. The ones with cracked spines, bent corners, and covers so creepy you almost didn't want to touch them at night. The books your teachers told you to put away because you're supposed to be reading real literature. The books your parents side-eyed but secretly loved that you were reading anything at all. If you grew up in the 90s or even brushed up against the 90s, you already know what I'm talking about. Goosebumps. Those iconic neon screen green spines, the dripping letters, the promise printed right there on the cover. Readers beware, you're in for a scare. For a lot of us, Goosebumps wasn't just a series. It was our gateway into horror. Our first taste of suspense. Our first realization that stories could make your heart race without a single picture moving on a screen. And today I want to take you back there. We're going to talk about the first 62 Goosebumps books, the original run that defined childhood fear. How one author, R.L. Stein, somehow signed up to write an insane number of books. The unforgettable cover art by Tim Jacobus, which scared us before we even opened the book. The Goosebumps TV series and why it felt different from the books. And finally, how all this has somehow turned into two motion pictures and a brand new TV adaptation decades later. So grab a flashlight, check under the bed, and let me scare you about the books that I already did. Part 1. Who was R.L. Stein before Goosebumps? Before R.L. Stein was the Stephen King of child horror, he was kind of a comedy writer. Not really. Robert Lawrence Stein started out writing joke books for kids. Silly stuff, pun-heavy stuff, bathroom humor stuff. He was the editor of a humor magazine for kids, not exactly the resume you'd expect from someone who would traumatize millions of children. But here's the thing, Stein understood pacing. He knew how to keep kids turning the pages. He knew how to hook an audience quickly. And most importantly, he knew how to write fast. When Scholastic came looking for a horror series aimed directly at kids, not teens, not adults, Stein was ready. The goal wasn't literally horror. It wasn't deep symbolism. It was short chapters, big cliffhangers, shocking twists, and just enough fear to make you scared, but not scarred. And that's where Goosebumps was born. Part 2, the first 62 books, A Horror Factory. The original Goosebumps run consisted of 62 books released between 1992 and 1997. That's not a typo. 62 books in about 5 years. Which means at some point R.L. Stein was releasing one Goosebumps book every single month. How's that even possible? Because Goosebumps was built like a machine. Stein has talked openly about how the stories followed a formula, and that wasn't a weakness, it was a secret. Each book usually had a kid protagonist often new to the town or bored at home. Something strange that adults didn't believe. A supernatural threat that escalated fast. And a twist ending that punched you right in the brain. Think about early classics. Welcome to Dead House. Stay Out of the Basement, Monster Blood, Say Cheese and Die, Night of the Living Dummy. These weren't subtle stories. These were bold, they were loud, and they trusted kids to handle being scared. Some of these books dealt with possession, body horror, identity loss, death, and betrayal, all wrapped in language simple enough for a 9-year-old to devour in one night. And let's not forget those twist endings. The moment you realize the danger wasn't over, the monster wasn't dead, the kid wasn't safe, the last page reveal, that was pure Goosebumps DNA. Part 3. How did Stein get contracted for so many books? Well, here's the wild part. Goosebumps wasn't originally planned to be that big, but the books sold, and they sold more. Then they sold millions. Scholastic knew they had lightning in a bottle, so Stein's contract expanded and expanded and expanded again. This wasn't one author casually writing with inspirational struck. This was an industrial level publishing operation. Stein wrote from detailed outlines, he reused structural beats, he kept his language clean and fast, and kids didn't care. They wanted more. By the mid-90s, Goosebumps was one of the best-selling book series in history. School book fairs were basically Goosebumps distribution centers. If you didn't have at least one Goosebumps book in your house, were you even a kid in the 90s? Part 4, the cover art. Tim Jacobus and Nightmare Fuel. So now let's talk about the covers. Because before you even read a single word, you were already scared. The Goosebumps covers were illustrated by Tim Jacobus, and these covers were unsettling in a way that was perfect for kids. Not gory, not realistic, but wrong. The colors were loud, the lighting was eerie, and the monsters always looked like they were caught mid-movement, as if they were moving, were going to crawl off the page. That melting camera on Say Cheese and Die, the haunted ventriloquist dummy slumped in a chair, the overgrown plants creeping out of the basement, the monster blood spilling everywhere. Jacobus has said he intentionally left things ambiguous. The monster wasn't fully revealed, the threat wasn't explained. Your imagination filled in the rest, and that's why those covers stuck with us. Even now, you can recognize one from across the room. Part 5. The Goosebumps TV series. In 1995, Goosebumps made the jump to television. The Goosebumps TV series aired for 4 seasons. Each episode adapted a single story, or sometimes combined ideas, and lean heavily into anthology-style horror. Now let's be honest, the show was cheesy, the special effects were low budget, the acting was hit or miss, and sometimes the tone leaned more silly than scary. But here's the thing, the show understood the assignment. It didn't talk down to kids, it didn't remove the danger, and it kept the twist endings. Compared to the books, the TV series was less intense, but more accessible. You could watch it with friends, you could watch it in the daylight, but the books, those were personal. Reading Goosebumps alone at night was a completely different experience. Part 6. From books to movies and beyond. We grow up, we move on, or at least we think we do. In 2015, Goosebumps returned, this time as a full-blown motion picture. Instead of adapting one story, the movie turned R.L. Stein himself into a character and unleashed all the monsters at once. It was nostalgia heavy. It was self-aware and it worked. Then came Goosebumps 2 in 2018, leaning even harder into comedy and chaos. And just when you think that's it, a new Goosebumps TV adaptation arrived decades after the original books, reimagining the stories for a new generation. Different tone, different pacing, same DNA. Because Goosebumps never really went away. And we're going to be going with a closing thought at why Goosebumps still matters. Goosebumps matters because it trusted kids. It trusted us to be scared, it trusted us to read, it trusted us to imagine. Those books taught us the fear could be fun. that stories didn't have to be safe to be meaningful. And whether you grew up reading the first 62 books, watching the TV series, or discovering Goosebumps through the movies, you're still part of it. So the next time you see that dripping green logo, remember you weren't just reading a book. You were being inducted into horror. Readers beware. Thanks for listening. All right, for this segment of the podcast, we're going to dive a little bit deeper into the TV series. The Goosebumps TV series that aired from 1995 to 1998, based on the books by R.L. Stine. This show didn't just adapt children's horror, it defined it. Over 74 episodes, Goosebumps introduced body horror, dread, cursed objects, and twisted endings, all before age 10. But behind the slime, masks, and ventriloquist dummies lies a surprisingly complex production story. Internationally filming reused monsters and rules about how scary was too scary. Let's break it down. Goosebumps was made of the stuff most people don't know. Although set in a small town America, it was filmed almost entirely in Canada. Nearly every episode was filmed in Ontario, Toronto, Scarborough, Markham, Pickering. This was done to cut production costs, and it's why you'll see Canadian road signs, reused suburban houses, the same forest in many episodes. Here's a fun fact. The same wooded area appears in A Shocker on Shock Street, The Werewolf of Fever Swamp, and Welcome to Camp Nightmare. Now, as for the actors, some of the actors were often uncredited on purpose. Many child actors, some of whom later became major Canadian TV stars, were not credited because producers wanted episodes to feel like standalone nightmares. It prevented kids from associating characters across stories. This was very unusual for TV at the time. R.L. Stine had limited control. Contrary to belief, R.L. Stine did not write the TV scripts. He was mostly hands-off. He only vetoed ideas that were too violent or too psychologically disturbing, ironically. Many of the darkest episodes are less dark than the books. So, we're going to deep dive into a couple of the episodes here. First one we're going to go ahead with is A Shocker on Shock Street. Why this episode is different. This episode reveals that the main characters are dead and have been the whole time. One of the darkest twists in children's television history. Some behind the scenes. Based on the book that was already considered controversial, the network demanded the ending be softened. Originally, the kids were meant to realize they died violently. And here's a hidden detail some of you guys might not know. Several extras playing tourists never blink on camera. A subtle clue, they're animatronics. And then moving right along in, not the first and second one, but Night of the Living Dummy 3. The most famous Goosebumps villain, Slappy the Dummy, became so popular that he replaced the original dummy, Mr. Wood. He became the de facto mascot of the franchise. And here's some production secrets. Slappy was operated by multiple puppeteers. His dialogue was recorded after filming. The dummy's head was heavier than expected, causing neck strain for actors. And a fun fact that Slappy's voice, Mark McKinney, was chosen because his voice could sound both friendly and threatening without changing pitch. And then you got the Werewolf of Fever Swamp. And why was it a two-parter? Well, in this episode, it had one of the largest budgets. It required complex night shoots and used multiple werewolf costumes, some never shown clearly. What most people miss is the werewolf design was intentionally kept out of focus in early scenes to hide costume limitations. And there's an Easter egg in this one. It's a full werewolf transformation scene was filmed, but it never aired. And then you got, I think this was the first episode of the TV series. The Haunted Mask. It was the episode that set the tone. This was a series premiere, and it went hard. The dark trivia. The mask was designed to look slightly asymmetrical to trigger unease. Network executives wanted it toned down. R.L. Stine personally fought to keep the ending. And a fun fact is that the mask's voice effect was created by layering 3 different recordings. And here's some creepy production rules. No visible blood. No on-screen deaths. No guns pointed directly at characters. The monsters could imply violence but never show it. Endings must contain some form of irony or punishment. And despite this, Goosebumps still terrify kids more than most adult horror shows. And here's some strange and obscure facts. The props that were reused constantly. Slappy appears disassembled in other episodes. And some episodes were filmed out of order, causing continuity errors. Canadian accents were sometimes dubbed over. And several episodes had alternate endings for international markets. The theme song, it includes reversed audio that sounds like whispering. Alright, for this part of the podcast, we're going to go ahead and do some trivia for you. We got 15 questions. And I do believe most of these questions were covered in the podcast. If they're not, then maybe you just have to be a diehard Goosebumps fan to know. But I do believe they're all based off of the TV show. I don't think it's as the books. So for question 1, is what country was Goosebumps primarily filmed in? And your answer to that question is Canada. And for question 2, which episode revealed its main characters were already dead? The answer to that question is a shocker on Shock Street. And question number 3, who voiced Slappy the Dummy? The answer to that question is Mark McKinney. Question number 4. What episode premiered the series? The answer to that question will be The Haunted Mask. Alright, question number 5. Why were many actors uncredited? And your answer to question number 5 is to keep episodes feeling standalone and mysterious. Question number 6. Which Goosebumps villain became the franchise mascot? And the answer to question number 6, which Goosebumps villain became the franchise mascot? That would be Slappy the Dummy. And question number 7, how many seasons did the original series have? Not the new adaptation, not the movies, but back in the 90s. How many seasons did the original series have? And the answer to that question, number 7, is 4. They had 4 original seasons. Question number 8. What limitation shaped the show's horror style the most? It's kind of a complicated question. We'll go ahead and read it back one more time. Question 8 is, what limitation shaped the show's horror style the most? And the answer to question number 8, what limitation shaped the show's horror style the most, is network censorship rules. And question number 9, which episode had a filmed but unaired transformation scene? We don't got to read that one back because that one's pretty easy to remember. Which episode had a film but unaired transformation scene? That was The Werewolf of Fever Swamp. It was a full transformation of a werewolf, but it was never aired. It was filmed but not put on the show. Alright, number 10. What technique was used to make Slappy more unsettling? Alright, we'll go ahead with the answer. This is like a 2-part answer, so you probably got the first part. I don't know if the other part was in the podcast. But what technique was used to make Slappy more unsettling? The answer was post-recorded dialogue and delayed lip movement. I don't think we mentioned the delayed lip movement, but we talked about the post-recorded dialogue. So moving on down to question number 11. Which episode is considered the darkest by the fans? And the answer to that question is A Shocker on Shock Street. And question number 12 is, why were monsters often shown briefly? Why were the monsters often shown briefly? The answer to that question, number 12, is to hide costume limitations and increase suspense. And moving on to question number 13. What was forbidden on screen? Now for this one, we mentioned a few of them. They had a few things that were forbidden on screen. But there's only one answer. So, the main answer you should probably be able to get. And the main answer for that one, for what was forbidden on screen, is visible blood. That was the main thing that they basically frowned upon. There couldn't be no visible blood. And for question number 14, what type of ending did most episodes require? What type of ending did most episodes require? And the answer to that one will be a twist or ironic punishment. So at every ending of every episode had either a twist or an ironic punishment. And I don't know if you guys can hear it, my stomach's growling. It's about time to get something to eat. Going on to the last question. Question number 15 is, why does the show still hold up today? This could basically be whatever you think. It is an answer based off the podcast, though. So the answer to why does the show still hold up today is, it has a strong atmosphere, practical effects, and psychological horror. So for the TV show, the Goosebumps didn't just scare kids, it taught them how horror works. It trusted its audience, it didn't explain everything, And it proved that fear doesn't need gore, just imagination. Alright, so we're going to go ahead and jump on into another part of it. And we're going to be talking about the actual movie, the first one, Goosebumps from 2015. We're going to break it down a little bit. We're going to dive into the movie that blends nostalgia, comedy, and a whole lot of monsters. It was released in 2015, Goosebumps. Whether you grew up reading the books or discovered the story through the film, this is a fun one to break down. We'll talk about the plot, themes, what worked, and what didn't. Then wrap up with the behind-the-scenes facts and trivia you can play along with. So this podcast is not over. We still got a little bit of time, people. First part, let's break it down. Goosebumps follow teenager Zach Cooper, who moved to a quiet town and discovers that the mysterious neighbor is one other than R.L. Stein, or at least a fictionalized version of him. The twist, the monsters from Stein's books are real, and they're trapped inside the manuscripts. When those manuscripts are accidentally opened, chaos erupts. Suddenly, iconic creatures like Slappy the Dummy, the Abominable Snowman, and the Werewolf of Fever Swamps are loose in the real world. Zach and his crush Hannah, Stein himself, and best friend Champ must recapture the monsters before the town and possibly the world is destroyed. At its gore, Goosebumps is a love letter to the books. It doesn't adapt one single story, but instead creates a shared universe where all the monsters coexist. The movie balanced mild scares with humor, making it accessible for kids while still entertaining for adults who grew up with the series. Jack Black's performance stands out. Instead of playing the real R.L. Stein, he portrays a grumpier, exaggerated version, which gives the film its comedic edge. While the plot is fairly straightforward, the real joy comes from seeing the classic Goosebumps monsters brought to life on the big screen. And here's some facts about the filming process. Jack Black didn't play the real R.L. Stein. His character is a fictionalized, more paranoid version of the author, created to fit the movie's comedic tone. And Slappy was a mix of practical effects and CGI. The ventriloquist dummy used animatronics for close-up shots while CGI handled the more complex movements and action scenes. Over a dozen Goosebumps books inspired the monsters. Creatures from many different books were combined rather than adapting just one story. The movie was filmed mostly in Georgia. Town scenes were shot in locations like Madison and Covington, which doubled as the fictional town of Greendale. R.L. Stein, he makes a cameo in as appearance. The real author appears briefly near the end of the movie as the drama teacher at the school. And I remember that when I watched it, because I remember watching the TV show when they had specials. He would come on at the beginning of the TV series and tell you the whole, you know, readers beware, you're in for a scare. And that was the real R.L. Stein as well. Alright, so I got some quick trivia questions real quick. I got 5 of them. Not a whole 15, just a real quick 5. What is the name of the town where the movie takes place? That would be Greendale, I do believe. Which Goosebumps monster acts as the main villain of the film? And that would be Slappy. What is the title of the final book used to trap all the monsters again? What is the final book? I don't even know the answer to that one. Okay, who plays the character of Zach Cooper? I don't know that kid's name either, but I know he's on a couple different Netflix shows. Let's see here. All right. My bad for the pause. I had to find my answer sheet because I didn't even know some of these answers here. So we'll go back and start. At number one is, what is the name of the town where the movie takes place? The answer to that one was Greendale. Alright, we had question number two. Which Goosebumps monster acts as the main villain of the film? Knew that was Slappy the Dummy. Now this one here, I feel really stupid. Because, what is the title of the final book used to trap all the monsters again? Answer to that question was Goosebumps. And here is the correct answer for question 4. Who plays the character of Zack Cooper? And that will be Dylan Minnette. I don't know if I pronounced his last name correctly. Alright, so the fifth and final question is, what object must be open for the monsters to escape? In order for the monsters to escape, an R.L. Stine's locked Goosebumps manuscript book must be opened. Alright, and that wraps up our breakdown of Goosebumps, whether you're watching it for the monsters, or for the nostalgia, or Jack Black's performance. It's a fun ride that captures the spirit of the books. So thanks for listening, and remember, sometimes it's better not to open the book.